Tonight on Pretty Late with Patty Vasquez, we learn how to speak Midwestern with author Ted McClelland. Gift Starter gives us a few holiday shopping tips. And Dave Lundy, Ken Jacobowski, and Eric Elk bring this week's politics to the round table right now on Pretty Late with Patty Vasquez.
Hello, it is Tuesday, and we are live in the Allstate Showcase Studio, December 6th, getting closer to Christmas, and I'm getting excited. I don't know if it was the snow or just the constant Christmas. Oh, I think part of it, Bennett, was the caroling party you had on last night.
Oh, they put us in the mood. That was some holiday fervor.
They were so good. My mom says that she listened to it. She kept rewinding and listening to them. And I was going to say the Andrew sisters, but there were guys involved, so I didn't want to.
that was fair.
Yeah, so that's why I was tongue-tied when I was trying to think of how I was trying to describe them. But something from the 1940s, very Bing Crosby and White Christmas. It was just really wonderful music. So thank you for lining that up.
Absolutely.
I'm trying to figure out a way to what can we do during the rest of the year? Because they're not the caroling party, you know,
right,
in August.
One of those seasonal things. But there's something very, very unique about just a four-person a cappella quartet.
They were wonderful. They were scrambling to try to do the Carpenters version
right.
of the song, but I was glad that I was like, no, don't worry. My husband will be fine if we don't sing the song that he likes. And I'm glad I didn't let them convince me to sing with them because, please, someday I will figure out a way to sing something in public again. But I'm scarred. I'm totally scarred. I studied at Second City, mm-hmm. and we were doing our graduation show, and when we came down to rehearsals, they started taking lines away from me. What I was explaining to Tina is that I can't hear music. I don't know when it's my turn to jump in on a line. So they started taking lines, and it was kind of publicly humiliating in front of the whole class.
Yeah.
So when we actually did the live performance, I used a character voice. I realized the day of the thing was I needed to hide behind something that wasn't just the sound of my own voice.
Sure.
So I used this voice like this. I started singing like this, and it worked very well. And then I threw off the rest of the cast because I hadn't been doing it in rehearsals.
Right. So there's this random voice that could have been from the crowd chiming
exactly.
in.
Exactly.
No idea.
It was, but at any rate, last night's music was wonderful. And I was trying to think about some of the traditions that I need to make sure, because we have a guest coming up after 11:30 called the Gift Starter. And you were saying that you're trying to wrap your arms around the cost of gift giving, the where to even start, what do people want? And I mean, now there is some ease to it as far as online shopping. But then Esmeralda, do you run into this where I'm now buying too many things because it's so easy to just click and have it delivered? No.
No.
No. No. Are you?
Esmeralda's got it under control.
No, I got it real under control.
It is done. See, now, did you guys ever open something the night on Christmas Eve and then all the gifts on Christmas morning? Did you have any traditions like that?
We would always have our stockings on Christmas Eve.
You would open stocking gifts.
Yeah, so it was something that could ease the tension of seeing what was in the stocking. You say, okay, you're fine. You maybe get a little chocolates, a little stocking stuff for toy or knick-knack. And then, but we were never able to open an actual present until Christmas morning.
Okay, yeah, I think that I was allowed to open one gift on Christmas Eve.
Mm.
And then Santa, of course, I would open all of his presents on Christmas morning. Esmeralda, did you ever have something where you...
Christmas for us, for some reason, was like New Year's. The second midnight hit, we're like, oh, Merry Christmas. Because we would have our celebrations would be Christmas Eve. And Christmas Day would be real boring. Mm-hmm. No one would be over. Because we would have done everything that night.
On Christmas. Oh, so all the family dinner event was on Christmas Eve?
Okay. So everything was done midnight Christmas Eve.
Then there you go.
Yeah.
Well, our tradition for the boys is they get Christmas pajamas on Christmas Eve. Mm. So that's been since they were babies. They always get to wear their Christmas pajamas to bed. And so it's something that they open and get to see what they got this year. But now I'm having trouble because Griffin is in that sort of he's 13. So I can't footty pajamas are way behind us. And I'm just trying, I don't want him,
Really. Onesies, isn't that a thing now?
Well, the thing about the sizing on that is that there's up to 12 and then men's small. So I'm having trouble finding that in between. Literally, he wears 14, 16 for clothing now. By the way, Esmeralda, Griffin is 5'4" now.
He's taller than me.
He's catching up. He's five. Inch. He's 5 foot and a quarter, I think. Is he taller than you by an inch?
Mm-hmm. I'm 5'3".
Bennett, he's. I'm hoping. I mean, I want him to be tall because he wants to be tall.
Sure.
My husband is 6'2", but my dad was 5'3".
So there's conflicting potential.
Yes, there is a conflicting potential.
Gotcha.
That and his hairline. I'm a little bit nervous for the kid because Steve's side of the family, they have very luxurious hair. I have a lot of hair, but my father had a high hairline, as does Griffin.
Oh, boy. I'm just going to say, I think it skips a generation.
I know. It's supposed to be
it
on the
It does. My grandpa was bald by, completely bald by 22.
Okay.
He was wearing a wig by, in commercials and everything, he was wearing a wig by 25.
Who was your grandfather?
My grandfather was Clark Weber.
I have to look up Clark Weber.
He was at WLS back in the heyday.
Oh,
so,
there you go. Very cool.
But yeah, I was thankfully.
And wait, did everyone know that he was wearing a wig, or did you just?
Yes.
Open
oh, he
that
was very
bag.
He was very open.
Okay.
At all the events he was doing, he was clearly haired one time and completely bald the other time. It was just advertiser wanted him to do.
He looked good as a bald gentleman, by the way.
He did.
But you could see in the younger picture where he's got a phone to his ear in a black and white.
Yeah.
Look at that. All right, let's I'm going to have to go down the history of Clark Weber. This is wonderful. Born in 1930 in Wauwatosa, Wisconsin.
There's the rabbit hole.
There's the guy. More after this. We have our next guest coming up. We'll talk to us about speaking Midwestern. And I have something interesting to share with Bennett. Many of our listeners know about Davide in Italy. More after this on 720 Dummy Gin. You are listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase studio. And I am, I was listening to Ro Khan's show earlier today with Anna DeVantis, and Tom Skilling was saying, Esmeralda, we're going to get snow Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, possibly all 3 days. It's going to get colder. It'll be colder next week than it is today and tomorrow.
Well, that's good, because my boots aren't really doing their job.
Right.
So I can put my snow boots on and not look ridiculous.
You feel like there's not enough snow to warrant the...
There will be next week.
There will be next week. It's coming. Winter is coming, as the Game of Thrones memes are telling us. I have been fortunate enough to have a listener in Italy named Davide, who Bennett is learning how to speak English by listening to this show on his way to work. And because it's about 8 o'clock in the morning when he tunes in, and he said that he listens, and I feel badly about that because one, I speak quickly. Two, I was raised in Chicago and we have our own way of talking. And three, my mother is from Mexico, which has an effect on my language development. When I was little, learning how to speak from someone who learned English as a second language also sometimes makes me doubt how I pronounce things like crocodile. Because in Spanish you say crocodil, and I still have to stop right when I get to the word to make sure I'm saying it correctly. So I don't know. I don't know what kind of accent I have. I'm sort of an amalgamation. Maybe Ted McClellan, who is presented this week actually the How to Speak Midwestern at the Book Bug. But tonight we're talking to him. He's an author. Hey Ted, how are you doing tonight?
Hey.
Hey.
Good morning.
Good morning. It's still night. Where are you?
Well, I'm in Michigan.
Okay,
it's
so
morning in Michigan.
It's 12:20 in Michigan. Fair enough.
Yeah.
So tell us a little bit about this, because I know I don't know if I say pop. I think I say, I like to think I say pop instead of, or can and not can.
Sure, sure. But you're on the radio.
Yes.
You have to learn to speak in a neutral way. You're speaking broadcaster English.
Esmeralda, would you say that I've learned how to speak proper English?
You're getting there.
I'm getting there. You know the one I do? I say Wisconsin with a G. That's one of the things that Chicagoans, I think, do.
With a G?
Yeah, Wisconsin.
Wisconsin. I see Wisconsin.
Right. And
Wisconsin.
Yes. I'm not going to practice it.
Big, big accent in the middle.
I see with that part.
Yeah, exactly.
So how can one learn how to speak Midwestern? Is that a preferred sort of region to mimic?
Well, it depends. It kind of was traditionally the sort of the neutral broadcast English, but in the last few generations, there's been this trend called the Northern Cities Vowel Shift that's made Midwestern speech more distinctive. And it's kind of what you were talking about a minute ago, where people will say pop, or where people will say can or absolutely. You know, those right. kind of sharp A sounds and drawn out O sounds have really become distinctive features of Midwestern speech, and they're really going to identify you as being from someplace like Michigan or Chicago or Buffalo or Milwaukee or Cleveland.
And these are things that you describe as being vowel shifts. And, you know, is it
sure.
is it something that once someone recognizes it, are people almost like overly sort of hypersensitive to their own way of speaking?
You know, a lot of Midwesterners don't think they have an accent, especially I quote a linguist in the book who says that Michiganders especially are notable for thinking they don't have an accent. He did his doctoral thesis at the University of Michigan, and students in his classes would always say, well, why don't we have an accent? Definitely in the Michigan way of speaking.
Right. I always think that people in Michigan, especially the farther north you go, people in Michigan seem to have
an
accent.
Yeah. Well, or if you go all the way to the UP.
Yes.
You know, they definitely got their own way of speaking up there.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Hey there. There seems to be a little bit of that.
Yeah, hey there. Well, yeah, that's in Wisconsin.
See, and that's the thing. I think that I do blend those Minnesota, Wisconsin, Michigan, but there are obviously sure. regional differences.
Yeah, but if I talk about three different dialect regions in the book. There's the Inland North, which is the region that Chicago is in, and that goes all the way from Rochester, New York on the east to Milwaukee on the west. And then there's the North Central, which is the Upper Peninsula of Michigan and northern Wisconsin and northern Minnesota. So that's where you'll hear the hey there and the A and the, what do you know?
Right.
Kind of talk.
And,
I mean, and there's the Midlands, which is our friends in central Illinois, and they'll say things like milk and warsh.
Okay, that's something that my dad would do. My dad never said milk or pillow, because some people seem to say pillow as well. But where does the warsh, where does that R come from? Because my dad did that, and he was a Southside Chicago kid that grew up on the north side eventually. Where is that?
Well, that supposedly came from the way people in eastern Pennsylvania would say, they'd talk about water.
Right,
and then there was that O sound, and it sounded like it could have taken an R in there, so that sort of O sound, water whoosh.
Right.
So it kind of transformed to whoosh, and now you don't hear it as much as you used to. You hear it among older people. My stepmom is from Granite City, Illinois, and she says whoosh.
Yeah.
And then there's an announcer for the St. Louis Cardinals. Mike Shannon, he always talks about how they're going to play the Washington Nationals.
I wonder how many people tweeted him. There's no R in Washington.
Oh, they all think there is in St. Louis.
Oh, do they?
Yeah.
So it's kind of that band that runs through Illinois that reaches obviously through parts of Missouri then.
Yes. It's called the Midland accent zone.
In your book, you have chapters that you can talk. Why would I want to talk through my nose? Is one of the chapters that you have.
Why would you want to talk?
Yes.
I don't know, but that's what we all do here.
We all do. Wait.
Well, that's what I do. I say that if you want to learn to talk like a Midwesterner, just pretend that the lower your lower jaw just doesn't exist, and then talk like you're just talking through the top part of your face. there's
everyone's trying to people who live in the Midwest are like, wait a minute, how do I what am I doing? I'm not moving. So are we mostly moving our lips and not our, so because I see some people when they talk they almost look like they're chewing is that what they're doing when they're engaging their jaw?
Well, I'm just kind of trying to help people emphasize the nasality.
Okay.
That's necessary for having a true Midwestern accent. There's some people have been said that Midwesterners, especially people from Michigan, they sound like pirates with head colds because they also really emphasize their R sounds. Well, I'm going out to the garage, and I'm going to look at the car and work on the engine.
Oh, I see. I can hear that. I can hear a little bit up at the upper part. And and there are also differences. There are words that people will go crazy about with each other, like roof and roof are mm-hmm. are two. Is that, which one is more the Midwestern? Do you have a thought on that?
I'm up on the roof.
Roof?
I'm trying to think which one I'm up on the roof. I guess I say roof.
You say roof.
I don't know. Yeah.
I say.
I don't hear. I didn't really get into the roof thing. Two words that people disagree about the pronunciation are COT and CAUHT. People from this
Caught?
Part of the country are yeah.
Okay. How do what's the other way of saying it?
Well, how would you say the two words?
What were the two words?
COT and CAUGHT.
I would say caught and caught.
Caught?
Yeah,
oh, caught
a
and.
A slight difference in the caught
yeah.
and like caught.
Caught and caught. Yes.
Yeah.
There should ought. Yeah, there should be an ought in caught because that's how it's spelled. And caught. Yes.
Right, right. But most people say in the same throughout the country.
Caught and caught. Oh, yeah. I could see them doing that. See?
Yeah. They call that the. It's not a merger when I say it. They call it the caught merger. But here in the Inland North Zone, we say them differently, and it's kind of unique in the United States. So
see,
that's a way to tell if someone's from at least this part of the Midwest.
Well, and that's the thing, too, is that whenever someone tries – no one ever really tries to guess where I'm from. I think that, one, I speak too quickly for anyone to really try to grab out any words. But I think it's fascinating to think about how these, you know, as you mentioned, parts of Pennsylvania having an effect on the, you know, the parts of Illinois and Missouri, the Midland, right? I think that,
it's a great
examination of history. And I see that you have some other books. Do you want to tell our listeners about some of the books that you've written as well?
Well, yeah, I guess they kind of informed this one. I mean, I wrote a book called The Third Coast, which was about a 10,000-mile journey around all five Great Lakes. And, of course, I picked up a lot of the slang that I put in the book by traveling through Wisconsin and the Upper Peninsula and Minnesota and then back through New York and Ohio. I wrote a book called Nothing But Blue Skies, which was a history of the Rust Belt that kind of covered the same territory. So, I mean, this is sort of an ongoing project of writing about the Midwest. And, you know, as you talked about the history and, you know, all the different dialect regions I wrote about all are based on some pattern of European settlement. You know, as you pointed out, the Scots-Irish who came through Baltimore and Philadelphia, then they moved across Pennsylvania and across Indiana and Ohio and Illinois, and so they had their own language system. And then the Inland North was spread by New Englanders coming from Vermont and upstate New York, moving west. And then the North Central accent, the North Country accent, that comes from the Scandinavians and the Germans. So yeah, these all have there's all a lot of history and ethnography in looking at this.
You know, it's fascinating. And as you mentioned, the Irish Scots who moved through Pennsylvania, that would make sense for my dad, who was second generation.
Right.
He was actually second generation Irish. So that kind of puts that
right.
in place as to why he said Warsh. Well, I loved
right.
having this conversation with you. And I don't know if you're coming through Chicago anytime soon, but it sounds like a lot about what you write has an impact right now, considering the fact that so many people talk about this sort of disconnect between the urban and rural. And you're covering so much of the heartland, the Rust Belt, as you mentioned, the Third Coast around the Great Lakes. I think a lot of the work that you have done probably informs you probably have a pretty good idea of what's going on with, you know, those who felt left behind in this last election year. Do you kind of get that feeling?
Well, I would think that actually the last book I wrote, Nothing But Blue Skies, kind of would give a better picture of that, because that was specifically about the Rust Belt and about, you know, towns like, you know, Buffalo or Gary or Cleveland that had been left behind in the, in the deindustrialization and the globalization of America, Decatur, Illinois, where I lived for several years. But you're talking about the Scots-Irish, and I want to bring up a very special word that's known in Chicago and also known in Pittsburgh, and that's the word jagoff. Not an obscene word.
No, I know. My producer looked up and I was like, that's fine. That's a yes. What is, before I let you go, what's the origin for the word jagoff? And I'm not, that's not why we're letting you go. We just ran out of time. But I do, now I'm fascinated.
Oh, okay.
Because I know that Nick D is going to be upset that he wasn't talking to you about the origin. Go ahead.
It's from the word jag, which means a thorn or to prick somebody.
Okay.
So, you know, a jagoff is an irritating person. So you're kind of, you know, prick somebody, someone who needles you or irritates you.
I love that. I love knowing that its origin are completely, it's almost pure
it
in that sense.
It goes all the way back to Northern Ireland.
Oh, perfect. Now I know. It's yes. One of my favorite ways of insulting somebody actually has
exactly.
Some roots in my ancestry. That's fantastic.
Well, yeah.
Ted, I look forward to having you on the show again. And can we tell people where to find your books?
You can get them from the publisher, Belt Publishing. You can get them at the bookseller where I did a reading last week. That's an excellent place to buy a copy. It's in Lincoln Square.
And again, he's written Nothing But Blue Skies and also How to Speak Midwestern. We look forward to talking to you again because I think you've got so much information. I think a lot of insight that more of us should learn about each other.
Okay, well, thanks a lot. I'll be doing some more Chicago appearances.
Excellent.
I'm dreaming of a white Christmas. Just like the ones I used to know.
Man, every Christmas song brings memories of one particular Christmas or another. I love the music. I love the holidays. The magic of it. But one thing that causes a lot of stress for, I think, many people like me is shopping, is buying gifts, worry about whether or not you're going to get the right thing, how many people you have to buy for. And then are you getting something they're actually going to use? And then there's the whole idea of regifting. Well, we have a guest on the air who can help you be more specific, and also find a way to perhaps waste less, whether it's money or items. We have on the line with us Ari Yu. Hi, Ari. How are you doing tonight?
Hi, Patty. Hi. I'm doing great. That song is awesome. I love Christmas music.
Well, you love Christmas. It seems like you love Christmas because you have found a solution for many people who find themselves just freaking out at the holiday time. What? Tell us a little tell us about giftstarter.com.
All right. GiftStarter is a totally new way to gift. It's a way for people to gift together. You can split the cost of anything sold online. And when you gift together, you get to share the joy of giving something really awesome and memorable to the people in your life. And so a good example is, instead of getting my mom a scarf or a nice sweater for Christmas, I could say, oh my God, I know she's been dying for this espresso machine. Get my brother and a couple cousins, throw in a couple aunts and uncles, and we can all get her an amazing espresso machine.
So this is a way for people. So is it for just anyone who clicks on and just scrolls through and says, oh, I can help these people out? Or you invite your friends and family and say, here, this is where we're going to kind of get together and purchase this. And then how do you keep it from the person who's going to receive the gift?
Okay, so on setting up the process, question number one.
Yes.
So you can find something special on giftstarter.com. We have over 4.5 million different products from all sorts of retailers like Amazon, Nordstrom, REI, whatever store you want. We also have a gift concierge service. So if there's a very special custom item that you'd like to gift, we can also help you make that happen too. So once you find out something special, you start a gift campaign, and then you invite friends and family to participate, and we allow you to do that through email, through text message, through Facebook, whatever that may be. And then once it funds, we make sure the gift is actually shipped to them, and we also include a personalized handmade card with everyone's photos and personal messages. And then the second question was, how do you keep this from them?
Yes, how do you keep it a secret?
One of our most favorite ways to do this is through Facebook. And a lot of people will say, can you really keep something secret from someone on Facebook? And yes, there's a feature on Facebook, and we actually have a detailed post on our blog that details how you'd keep some posts secret from someone.
Mm-hmm.
And you can actually select. So if I wanted to get a really cool gift from my husband, I could share it all over Facebook, but I can actually select in the drop down on the bottom right corner of any post to not show that particular post to my husband. So as long as nobody tags him in Facebook, he will never know that post ever exists. And so that's a great way for me to tell my friends and family that there's this gift opportunity for my husband, but he would never find out about it. And you can also share it through email and text message. And those are other ways that, you know, that person would not find out about that gift.
I love this idea. And by the way, for our listeners, Ari has given you an opportunity and a promotion of $20 towards your any gift funded by GiftStarter. So you can use, and by the way, I just feels funny that it's my name, but it's Patty20. So it's PATTI20 is your promotional code to get started at GiftStarter.com. How did this come about? What was the genesis of this idea?
Well, it actually came about several years ago when I wanted to give my friends gifts, you know, being invited to baby showers and wedding gifts. And, you know, there's the office gift. And, you know, when you get, like, for example, if you go to a wedding registry, I'm always late. And the only gifts that are on the wedding registry are like the big ticket items, like the $200, $400 items. And a single person, you can't really afford that very well. And so I'd always be like, oh, I missed getting them the plates, which is a sucky gift anyway, if you're going to give it to your friend.
Right.
And then I'd be stuck with the espresso machine, for example. And so there wasn't any good way for me to get something awesome for friends. And so I thought, well, why would that be? Why should I be limited by budget when we have all this technology out there? And so we decided to build it.
And that's wonderful because it is more precise. And then you're not, if you can get one nice thing for somebody, one of the items I saw was a blade sharpener for a family that does a lot of ice skating. And I love that as, you know, then people can kind of chip in and here's something the whole family uses it. You know, they can, which is such a, that's a great idea. And something nobody else would think of. One, they wouldn't think of it. And two, I'm guessing it's a little expensive.
Exactly. And one of the things that we've learned servicing lots of different customers and gifts is that when you don't have, when you're not limited by your specific own personal budget, you can actually think of something that someone really would like. You know, you can think of anyone in your life and you go, you know, maybe it's my neighbor, maybe it's my boss, maybe it's my really good friend or sister. If I wasn't limited by my individual budget of what I can actually afford, whether it be $20 or $80 towards that person, and you get to combine it with other people, you go, huh. Instead of scarves, they might actually like a new, I don't know, walk means aren't around anymore. But it might be like...
You and I are almost the same age there, Ari.
We actually had a story like this where this guy had been sleeping on the floor for 8 years and his friends were like, hey, we should get Eric a bed, and they got him a bed. Or it could be like camera gear. You know a friend that's a fantastic photographer. Maybe they need a new lens, or someone that just might need help for a week. Let's get them a week of hot meals delivered to their door.
And you bring up something wonderful, which is you can do that for somebody. I've saw a couple of items where someone's recovering from an illness, and here you can help supply some meals for the family. And I love that. You can kind of be an angel giver.
Yep, absolutely.
And how can people get started? How does somebody set this all up? They go on the website. By the way, it's giftstarter.com, correct?
Correct. GIFTSTARTER, giftstarter.com. Or you can actually contact us at the concierge. It's a free service. So you just email concierge@giftstarter.com. And any one of our team members can help get you started on your gift journey. And don't forget to use Patty20.
Patty20. That's PATTI20. And again, you can scroll through and see how other people maybe, you know, get an idea of how to get started. You can see what other people have set up. This is a really wonderful idea. I know that Bennett's excited. I'm excited. Now I know how to get started on my shopping. Because is this only for items that you can purchase? Or are there like, you know, maybe people who want to plan a vacation, or it's not quite that yet?
Oh, no. Actually, we can do that. We actually have someone that's funding a $500 airplane ticket on Alaska Airlines. So literally you dream of the gift that you would like to give, and we will figure out a way to help you make it happen. It's that easy.
And is this something you do year round? Like people can set this up for birthdays and for anniversaries? Yep.
Anniversaries, birthdays, babies. It's the gift for the boss, graduation, just a thank you to the office assistant who does so much work for everybody. There's so many ways and so many gifting ways that we can come together to show our love for the people in our lives.
And there are other ways to get involved. You can also go to Facebook and find giftstarter.com. You can create a community of your own. And really, it's a great way if you do have a, find yourself in a situation where you need to support the people in your neighborhood. I think this is a great idea as well. Wow, Ari, this is really this is really wonderful. Website that you've created and a way for people to feel like they're doing something rather than just shopping and buying for the sake of shopping. This is dedicated and it's it has a really a wonderful focus. So thank you so much for sharing your story with us.
You're very welcome.
And again, for our listeners, a promo code is PATTI20. And thank you for that, too. I know I'm going to go use that right now during the commercial break. Ari, have a great, wonderful season, and we'll talk to you again.
Thank you. Have a good night.
You too. Four calling brave friends, two turtle doves, and a partridge in a pear tree. I've never understood why you would buy almost any of those things. Especially the French maids of dancing. Would you? Is it something? I mean, that seems like a...
They're pretty
like,
ridiculous.
That seems like a bachelor party waiting to happen. Eric Elk joins us in studio. And coming up after midnight, we're going to have our roundtable of topics in the news. In particular, our president-elect tweeting in the middle of the night after Saturday Night Live and some developments with the carrier company, which apparently is not sending jobs, or are they sending jobs to Mexico? And his tweet at Boeing and all kinds of things. But we were talking to Ari Yu before the break about giftstarter.com. Again, don't forget your promo code to do some shopping for your family and maybe buy something that's a little more... meaningful. You can go to giftstarter.com. But are there any partridges in a pear tree? I bet you that Ari could set you up with a partridge in a pear tree, but that seems like a lot
she'd
of upkeep.
She'd be able to find one.
Yeah, she'd be able to do that. And what else? There's 5 golden rings. So do you have the number? I can't get to the website for how much this would all cost.
I've got the list of all of the items in the 12 days of Christmas.
Okay.
It comes out to a whopping $156,508 if you paid for all of those things.
Take two.
Take two. Just two of those. What would you pick? The 5 golden rings? I would pick the 5 golden rings.
Absolutely. One for every finger.
Exactly. I know. See, walking around like that. Well, okay. How much of the does it give each total? Okay.
It breaks it down. So from the starting with the first day of Christmas, partridge in a pear tree is $210.
Okay.
The 2 turtle doves is 375. 3 French hens, 182. 4 calling birds, $600. 5 gold rings, here you go, Eric, $750.
Okay. Well, I guess it depends on how big the rings are.
That is true.
Okay.
6 geese laying are $360. Uh-huh. 7 swans, $13,000. 8 milkmaids comes in at $58.
Wait. 8 milkmaids.
8 milkmaids.
Are $58?
I guess.
Why are they so cheap?
That's the cheapest
maybe
thing.
Maybe just for the hour?
Yeah.
I don't know. That's terrible. I don't even. Okay, I'm sorry. Go
the
ahead.
Hourly milkmaid.
Yes.
Right.
Okay.
9 ladies dancing, $7,500.
Sure. They're much more expensive than the milkmaids. Okay.
Just like up there with the 10 lords of leaping, $5,500. 11 pipers piping, $2,700. 12 drummers, $2,900. All coming to a rough total of $156,000.
So the ladies dancing are the most expensive item on that list, by the way. Just so that we're clear on that. Just
as they should be.
Yes, because the lords are leaping. How high can they jump? You get to really impress me.
They do not have the hops.
They do not have the hops. More after this on 720 WGN. By the way, Knife and Tyne will be in the studio shortly, as will Ken Jacobowski. Dave Lundy will be on the line. And I'm looking forward to all of that after this. You are listening pretty late. It is just a little bit after midnight in the Allstate Showcase studio. And we're rocking and rolling now. We have so much fun last hour talking to Ari Yu about giftstarter.com. Don't forget your promotional code is PATTI20 to get started. You get $20 off on your first purchase. And I love talking to Ted McClellan about talking Midwestern. I wonder if my guests in studio use the word that he left us on, which is one of my favorite ways to insult somebody. He was telling us about the origin of the word jack-off. And we have in studio. I'm not saying that because you guys are in studio. I just actually love that word. Eric Elk joins us, political strategist.
No, but you did look at me.
I did not. Do you use that word, jagoff?
Not in a long time. I do remember growing up using it as an insult more than once. In fact, quite a few times.
Oh, it's awesome.
Oh, my dad would use it all the time. Driving, be like, look at this jagoff. I just remember him saying that all the time.
What's the origin?
Now, Nikki Allen from Knife and Tyne. We also have Hannah from, I want to say Hannah B, but you just Hannah, right? Because
Both, either way.
Either one works. And so Nikki and Hannah are joining us from Knife and Time, bringing us some delicious treats, including an amazing apple cider. Is this I don't know how to begin.
So at the restaurant, I call it the apple toddy. It's served hot, but I can't make it hot when I'm on the radio. So I have it nice and ice cold for you guys.
It's so good.
But it's just a spiced, you know, hot toddy with apple cider, whiskey, a homemade maple cinnamon syrup. And at the restaurant, we do a little freshly grated cinnamon on top as well. So
it's wonderful in studio, as is with ice. It's so good. So you were giving me kind of a look like you weren't familiar with the word jagoff.
No, come on. You guys always make fun of me that I'm always like the youngest one in the room.
No, Hannah, have you heard the word jagoff?
I use it frequently.
Bennett, have you used the word jagoff?
I don't think so in the past 10 years.
In the past 10 years, you're like, what, 22? How old are you?
I probably used it when I was 12. First time I heard it.
Is it a Midwest thing?
It is a, well, our guest, Ted McClellan, who wrote about how to talk Midwestern. By the way, for listeners who are thinking that I'm using a horrible word, he was telling us the origin is actually from Ireland, and it has to do with the thorn, you know, so it's something annoying. So a jag would be a jagged piece that would cut you or, you know, pierce you, prick you, and so that would be someone annoying is a jagoff. So I kind of love that. Rich Cantu also joined us in studio, musician that I worked with on Friday at the Athenaeum Theater. Your music, your singing was unbelievable, and I wanted to have you on as soon as possible. So thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. And after the 12:15, we're going to hear some music throughout the hour. We'll have some live music from Rich Cantu. Tell us a little bit about Nikki. Nikki and Hannah, you were telling me there's some New Year's festivities going on at Knife and Tine.
Yes. In addition to our regular a la carte dinner menu, our chef is going to be providing a special prefix menu as well.
And see, and we've been talking about prefix menus on the show. People are, I think, a little, you know, sometimes they're a little afraid of that. I don't get to order what I want. It's usually the chef's specialties or the things that he's really passionate about. And it's such a great way to learn about a restaurant, isn't it?
Absolutely. And what we like to do is offer both. So we have the option of...
You're giving us an option.
Absolutely. Hey. So you can choose it if you want to be brave and experience what Chef Paul has to offer, or you can just order whatever you'd like off the regular menu as well.
Any drink specials that come along with that?
Well, Nikki is... we'll tell you all about that.
Well, the following day, we're going to be doing mimosas for New Year's Day brunch. Mm-hmm. And we also do a really cool brunch menu the following day as well.
Well, the entire drink menu, Eric, is... Well, you had the drinks on election evening.
The come-over was phenomenal.
Oh, it was all so good. The sparkling one, the middle one, not the American, which was a shot and a beer. But the next one was... what was the other drink? Do you guys remember? Because it was unbelievable. I don't know. It was sparkly.
Sparkling blood orange.
Yes.
Whatever it was, it was good.
It was all. There was a comb in the drink. That was Ken's trying to forget that evening.
No, I remember. Well, I am trying to. I do remember that.
Yeah, it was surreal. Hannah was here. I know Krista was here as well from Knife and Tine. And no one wanted to assume anything about the results of election night. But it was surprising. And it was, we were on the air until the moment he did his acceptance speech.
We kept going after that, too.
We did, yeah. Yes, we did. We were in the green room fixing the world.
Yeah. I think shortly after he was announced as the president elect, I think they threw it to his celebration.
Yes,
and we were off the air, but not done for the night.
No, we were here till what, 4 in the morning? I was here till 6. By the way,
we were in shock.
We're just a lot of surprises, and we'll talk more about what has unfolded since that night. But we were lucky enough that night to have also macaroni and cheese from Knife and Tine as comfort food. You brought some pasta with tonight, too. Tell us about that one.
Definitely. So we always do seasonal mac and cheeses. This one is awesome. It's actually baked. We do a beer cheese in there, pork caramel, a little bit of pretzel crumble, and then really cool, it's a local... Big Fork sausage, and they do really fun sausage. This one's a bacon sausage on top.
Oh, God.
So
you've got to have some of that, Ken.
It's incredible.
It's the second week in a row where you're like, what are they bringing in studio? What kind of people? Do people just come in and just shovel food into Patty's face? My friends know how to, they know. Well, the thing I've always loved about Knife and Tine, which was actually one of the first restaurants we ever had on the air, it was only a month after Carissa opened, a little over 2 years ago, and we've been celebrating almost every month the wonderful restaurant that she and Ryan created on Fullerton Avenue, 1417 West Fullerton Avenue. And when you walk in, there's something both familiar and unique about it. Does that make sense? You walk in and you're like, absolutely. I belong here and I feel like I've been here before, but it's all brand new. That's exactly how it feels when
I. And we're so happy that you feel that way because I know that's what Ryan and Carissa wanted to create.
It is. It's a beautiful restaurant. They've been featured on Check Please. You can go to checkplease.com. I think that's for Channel 11. You can, well, WTTW's website has all the restaurants they've featured, and Knife and Tines on that list. And I love everything you guys do. It's comfort food that is Eric, is that comforting? Do you feel comforted by your mac and cheese?
Oh my goodness.
Well, let's all amazing. We're gonna take a bite. When we come back, we're gonna talk to Dave Lundy. We'll hear some music from Rich Cantu and find out more about Knife and Tine's upcoming specials and events. And, you know, and Ken Jacobowski and Eric Elk are here hanging out, you know, enjoying what we have to talk about. There's so much drama. He's never going to stop giving us things to talk about, Ken. We are live in the Allstate Showcase studio, and Rich Cantu joins us. I was trying to ask what you're going to play. You're playing an original song of your own. What's it called?
It's called Give It All Away.
This is Give It All Away from Rich Cantu.
Give it all away. Leave a note at your door saying you're gone with me today before you turn gray. And the kids grow older and they want to run away. Watch us run away. Glad you're not here. We'll read the postcards that we send, and we send them every year. Watch us. And we'll never shed a tear. Watch us run away. Watch us run away.
That's Rich Cantu. Let's Give It All Away. That's wonderful. That was beautiful. You were surprised that I invited you on so quickly because we just worked together on Friday. You're like, what? I'm sorry, what? I'm like, get in the studio. We're going to have more music with Rich Cantu in just a little bit. On the line with us, we have Dave Lundy. By the way, Dave, have you ever been to my favorite restaurant, Knife and Tine?
I have not.
I think that we all, that's what we need to do, we should broadcast live from there and do one of our little political roundtables at Knife and Tine. I think that's what has to happen.
You're talking.
I know. I'm saying.
I like what you think there, lady.
I know. We set up a camera. You just did Chicago Tonight, didn't you? Tonight.
What's that?
Did you do Chicago Tonight tonight?
I did do Chicago Tonight tonight. Tonight.
Tonight. Yes. I know. It's all very confusing. How did it go? Were you there to talk about Governor Rauner hopefully vetoing the energy bill that you were there to testify about a couple weeks ago?
Sadly, I was there to talk about Governor Rauner probably signing the bill tomorrow, and it was funny because I was on opposite a state rep friend of mine who's one of my oldest friends in Illinois politics, and we just happened to disagree on the issue, and so it's a little weird. You know, I'm like trying to be really gentle where normally I would go for the jugular. I'm being a little bit gentle, which in my case means I still, you know, disagreed intensely, but did so politely.
Eric, what do you think about that?
All I got to say is that I thought Dave, you did a great job in those hearings, especially when, was it the 12th panel of a six-hour hearing that you were on, and you still brought it?
You like that one, the one where I got into it with one of the representatives who's a dear friend of Exelon's?
Well, I did. I mean, we were on the other side of the – I was on the other side of the issue from you, but I thought you were a heck of a adversary, and I thought you did a really good job.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate the kind words. I would have appreciated them more had we won, but I still appreciate the kind words.
Was it even close?
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, the vote was 63. You needed 60 in the House. They got 63, and I think they got 32 in the Senate. And it was a tough issue. They needed a supermajority to have an immediate effective date, which is what the plan was. We stopped that. We held them from getting their supermajority, and so they lowered the standard by moving the effective date to the beginning of the next fiscal year, and then they got it through. So, look, I've been doing these fights for more than a decade. Exelon has enormous sway in the Capitol. My coalition took a lot of heat. We and our whopping 8 lobbyists, and ComEd Exelon and their whopping 55 lobbyists, and a bevy of brilliant people like Eric behind the scenes helping. And
Eric, can you tell me, so how much is the state going to be spending on this bailout for Exelon and energy nuclear plants? And part of it is to avoid raising costs to consumers. Is this kind of the logistics of it?
Yeah, well, that, and I think, Illinois currently, all the companies in Illinois, employers, folks in Illinois enjoy some of the lowest energy prices of any of the Midwest states. And I think that that's a big part from deregulation years ago. And I think that
part of that was to take government out of the marketplace. And then Exelon says, oh, no. You know what? We would really like the government to be a part of this.
Well, I don't know if it's so much that as well as the nuclear energy is some of the cleanest in terms of the carbon footprint. So you're also, keeping clean energy and producing a cheap energy as well as protecting jobs.
Dave?
So Eric is not my oldest and dearest friend in politics.
Come on, Dave, rip it. Dave.
If you go to WGNradio.com, you can watch Eric Elk basically call Dave Lundy a jagoff on the camera. Go ahead, Dave.
So, how about those Cubs in the World Series?
With all due respect to my friend Eric, and I don't mean to replicate the hearing, but everything that guy just said is booze anyway. The reality is that Exelon was the champion for the free market. For decades, people would come into Illinois saying, hey, we'd like a subsidy, or hey, whether it was Futuregen or Tenasca, which I was part of, or the renewable companies or any of the rest of it. And Exelon was the one saying, no, you live or die based on the marketplace. If you can't survive in the marketplace, you shouldn't survive. And that rule applied until fracking drove down the cost of electricity prices. And then suddenly they're like, oh, hey, hi, what about us? Although, interestingly, they were advocating that position in Illinois and New York. Meanwhile, they were the champions against the bailout of a different energy company in the state of Ohio as recently as this year. So, look, they're a bunch of hypocrites. These guys just didn't like it when the markets treated them poorly. They privatized all their profits. They weren't around offering us, saying, oh, you know what, we are making too much money, so we need to give you guys some of our money back. So they privatized their profits, and then when the market turned, they want to socialize the risks. The thing began as a bailout. It ended as a bailout, and they put a lot of window dressing on it. But fundamentally, it's a bailout, and that's why my coalition and all of our allies, from the Manufacturing Association to the Chamber of Commerce to AARP to the Attorney General's Office, to the Chemical Industry Council and every other people who are normally part of Eric's coalition. They were on our side because they say this is a jobs killer.
Well, I thought, I know, Patty, in your question to Eric, you asked how much is the state going to spend?
Yeah.
Implying that state government's going to write a check. I thought this was going to be done on the back of consumers through rate increases.
It's correct. $235 million a year for bailing out the nukes plus and then several hundred more a year.
A quarter average on your monthly bill.
Malarkey. Horse pucky.
Oh.
Hey, that is, that, hey there. That is,
some, this is some Joe Biden fighting words you're using now.
look, the reality is that the bill itself on page 364 says that there's going to be a brand new charge on your bill for quote-unquote energy efficiency, $2.33 a month, escalating 4% a year up to $4 a month in ComEd, starts at $4 a month in Ameren, going up to $6 a month. That's one of the charges on the bill. The 25 cents is an average for all ratepayers across the entire state in two chunks. In the 3.6 million ratepayers are averaged, and supposedly it's a quarter, except it's not really a quarter because all they do is they say, well, if we spend a dollar for energy efficiency, you save three. And it's as I said on Chicago Tonight, I was really excited to use this SAT word. It's a tautology.
Oh, yeah, I've heard that. Last time I heard that was when I used the word jagoff.
Said no one ever.
I like how that circled back around.
Circling it back around.
So if they're going to put, let's say, you know, whether it's between a quarter and $4 a customer per month, can we do that for the CPS then? Can we just, like, can we just put a quarter on some bill?
Not on a bill, but we already are through property tax increases and God knows whatever else will have to come down the road. Mm-hmm. And I have no idea what they're going to do to fill the $215 million gap, which they've already assumed was in the budget, which is why the credit bureaus lowered CPS's rating after they reached the agreement with the teachers union. Everyone was scratching their heads like, well, why? We now have cost certainty. And they said, no, if you read the fine print, there's a $215 million mm-hmm. question mark. Springfield has to act, and we're not so sure they're going to do this.
So,
and they didn't.
So and that was what was so amazing yesterday, because not yesterday, on Thursday, there Bruce Rauner is, and he's the guy who vetoed the CPS funding bill for whatever it was, $230 million or so, and he called that CPS bill a bailout, even as he is leading the charge to put these phony baloney rate caps that actually aren't rate caps into this bill and get $235 million for Exelon. And what was so amazing just today is that, so the speaker, by the way, who actually was the one pushing the bill, didn't even vote for it. And
what?
Then just today, yeah,
but that's often. I mean, a lot of times the speaker does not vote.
But yes, but it's not often, Eric, that today, a few days later, the speaker came out and out of the leaders meeting was attacking the governor for backing his corporate buddies instead of the people. It's like, you know, which corporate buddies did the governor recently back? Exelon. And who was for the bill? The speaker. It was just, it's through the looking glass politics. It's just bizarre.
Wow. It's
sorry.
Every time I go to Springfield, it's bizarre. The whole thing is surreal. We have Dave Lundy on the line with us. We are talking. I have to figure out a name for this segment because I know that Steve Cochran's name for the panel that you were on, Dave, was the best damn political period. Team period it was a long title. I don't know what the
should have an exclamation mark, not a period.
Period? Did he say, or was it damn it? I don't know what the it should be. Damn it, best damn political team. Damn it, not Steve.
Well, you know what we could do? We could be like, you know, Jeb Bush and just put an exclamation point. As you said, excellent. We'll just call it Jeb.
Jeb.
As my 11-year-old loved to say.
Lundy, you're killing me tonight.
There we go. Was that your guy?
Hey,
was Jeb your guy?
Oh,
well. We are hanging out in the Allstate Showcase studio. I also want to remind everybody that Knife and Tine has some great events coming up. We're going to talk with them more after the news as well. But right now, I want to find out, you were telling me that for New Year's Eve, you have a prefix option and also the full menu is available. How can people make reservations for New Year's Eve?
You can log on to Yelp. and make your reservation
through Yelp.
There. Yes.
What?
Yelp.
I didn't. I've never.
Yelp now has a reservation platform. It's pretty new, and we're excited to be partnering with them.
Oh, that's really nice. I love that. And do you have? Is there a cocktail you're working on for New Year's Eve? Is it already on the menu, or do you have? I know you said mimosas on New Year's Day.
Yes. With the prefix menu, we're going to be doing drink pairings as well.
Drink pairings?
Yes. Yeah. So I'm figuring that out with the chef because we're going to pair them so well together. But
the things that Nikki and the staff come up with at Knife and Tine will absolutely blow your mind because everything is fresh. Everything is original. They use the best ingredients. I can't even begin to explain it. And Nikki, you just started there when they opened. You were a baby bartender. Now you were a baby bartender, and now you're a badass bartender.
Thank you.
You were kind of a badass the whole time.
She is.
She is. More after this on 720 WGN. Dave, don't go anywhere. You are listening pretty late. We are live in the Allstate Showcase studio. And, of course, our conversation continues. But first, we have some music, some holiday music from Rich Cantu.
I love those J-I-N-G-L-E bells. Those holiday J-I-N-G-L-E bells. I love those J-I-N-G-L-E-P-E-L-L-S. I love those jingle bells. Jingle bells, jingle bells, jingle all the way. Oh, what fun it is to ride in one horse open sleigh. Hey! Jingle bells, jingle-ing-a-ling-a, jingle all the way. Oh, what fun it is to ride a one horse open sleigh. Dashing through the snow in a one horse open sleigh. All the fields you go, laughing all the way. Bells on bobtail ring, making them spirits bright. Fun it is to ride and sing a sleighing song tonight. As the jingle bells, jingle bells, jingle all the way. Oh, what fun it is to ride a one-horse open sleigh.
Christmas, and I didn't even know what to expect because you think jingle bells and then you get the rockin' jingle bells. That was wonderful. Hey, Rich, if people want to hire you for the holiday season to come out and play live, where can they find you?
You can find me on Facebook. Just look up Rich Cantu.
Rich Cantu, that's C-A-N-T-U. And that was really a lot of fun. Where'd you grow up?
Chicago. Born and raised. Southwest.
Southwest, you don't want to tell us the neighborhood.
I kind of grew up in a lot of neighborhoods, but. Pilsen, Garfield Ridge.
And where did you, how old were you when you started playing guitar?
12.
Because it seems like you have a lot of fun. Do you still have fun playing?
I love playing guitar more than anything in the world.
You absolutely light up. That was one of the reasons did you know I Facebook Live'd you at the event on Friday? Couple of videos. And I was just really, I was just taken aback by how wonderful your playing was. That's why I wanted you on.
Oh, thank you.
And we look forward to having you on more times. We're going to hear more music from Rich after, and just in a little bit, we have Dave Lundy. I didn't forget about you, Dave. Just want to make sure you know that. Hi, Dave Lundy.
Hi, Patty Vasquez.
How are you doing? Well, I have to say your whole name because you're my guest. And, you know, I'm the host and I have to make sure that everyone knows who you are. And also we have Eric Elk in studio who, even when the mics are off, he still leans in and talks into it in honor of you, Dave. Because I love that. Dave always leans in and he does no matter what. I feel like you have a microphone at home, perhaps. Are you talking to a mic right now?
I'm talking into a headset.
And we also have Ken.
Just so you know, I mean, I would be there with you. I'm physically there, or I'm there with you in spirit and in voice. But my wife is out of town, so I thought it would be really bad form to leave my two kids home alone, my 6 and 11-year-old, and just hope they wouldn't wake up while I left.
Well, you could always bring them with sometime. We could set up maybe some cots in the studio, you know, in the green room. We could hook them up with some fun cartoons to watch.
Hey, I'll bring Eva.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll do a slumber party for the kids. Oh, this stuff. Now we're talking. Now we're cooking with fire. I'm just saying. By the way, Dave, Ken had some thoughts on some more developing news. We haven't even talked about Carrier on the air yet, have we? this because last week there was a lot of excitement. You know, over the that weekend leading up to Monday, Donald Trump was tweeting out that he's in talks with the guys in charge of Carrier. He's going to prevent them from taking jobs out of the country and sending them to Mexico. And the numbers kept changing, because first it was like 2,000 jobs were going to be sent to Mexico, and he saved them all. And then no, but it was about 1,100. And today the numbers keep changing. Ken, what did you hear?
Well,
or what'd you read?
It's actually predictable. What happened, and sad, in fact, really sad, given the time of the year. Trump, as you all remember, went down to Indianapolis and made a grand speech saying that Carrier is now keeping actually the numbers over 1,100 people, which is so great.
Oh, yes. Huge numbers.
Huge numbers. Well, it's
huge.
And 1,100, that number was significant to a guy named Chuck Jones, who is the head of United Steelworkers 1999, who represents all of those workers. And that was a significant number to him, because there are only 1,350 workers at the plant. So when Trump said actually the number's over 1,100 people, his people had a party. People apparently went home, celebrated, went shopping for Christmas, had nights of sleep that for the first time in a long time, they weren't worried about their future.
And how awkward, by the way, socially, because it wasn't all the jobs. There were then still people that were going to lose their jobs.
Well, there were a small number.
Right.
But today, Mr. Jones was informed that it's not 1,100, that actually 730 of the jobs are staying and 550 members are losing their jobs. And so he had to call people who thought
they
their
were
jobs
staying.
Were saved and tell them, I'm sorry, no, your jobs are actually gone.
Oh.
And the headline, The Washington Post, Carrier union leader says Trump's big deal is a lie. And this was predictable. You knew this was going to happen. They overshot on this, and it's going to, you know, it will have a ripple effect into other deals. And it's just a shame. You don't mess around with people's lives for politics. And Donald Trump's been doing that now for more than 18 months.
But what are the politics of doing it after he's won the election? I mean, why wouldn't he negotiate? Obviously, he couldn't offer any sort of subsidies or tax breaks before he actually won the election.
Well,
but what's the point of doing it before he's even in office?
Well, if you listen to what Trump said, he was watching the news and he saw a guy from the plant, a worker, who said, I know my jobs aren't going to leave at the end of the year because Donald Trump said they're going to stay. And that's when Trump felt,
remembered he had said that.
I didn't really mean literally. If that's what I thought was the scariest thing at his press conference, where he said, well, I didn't really mean like literally. It was a euphemism. I meant people like Carrier.
Right.
And that was kind of scary, because he doesn't realize the literal impact of his words. The people do listen to what he says and take him seriously. Which apparently was a problem throughout the campaign, because his campaign manager on Friday said that the media made a huge mistake, because all what they did was literally they took Donald Trump seriously. They reported everything he said accurately.
Yeah.
And they said, he said you were the only guys that took what he said seriously. The public never believed him. And that was the difference. So bottom line is, I think Trump wanted to build momentum. He wanted to jump on his plan to create jobs and to save jobs. This was a great opportunity for him to do that, and he tried to stagecraft it, and it's kind of landed like a thud.
Yeah, but it doesn't seem to be landing like a thud with Americans. They're drawn to the SNL tweets and Boeing is spending too much money and they're over budget and we have to cut this back. Those are the things that people hook onto. So how do you...
Yeah,
it's kind of
amazing. I mean, you're watching a guy who was the master of distraction, he's got time to watch SNL and tweet about it, but not time to attend his national security briefings. I think he's attended 2 out of 20 that have been offered to him. And he does things like this Carrier thing. And actually, I disagree with Ken. The public showing that the polls have shown the public agrees with what he did or what they think he did.
Right.
Well, it's what they think he did, Dave.
Right.
And the illusion. He's great at creating illusions. He's been smoking mirrors, and he's been doing it for more than 18 months. And it's, maybe you can pull stuff like that off when you are a candidate, one of 18. Maybe you can even do it when you're one of two. when the other opponent is not well liked. But when you are the president, everything you say is taken seriously and has an impact around the world instantly. You can't mess around. And there are people tonight, unfortunately, probably about 300 more than expected, who were notified that they actually did lose their jobs. And it's really a shame that those people were played with.
So here's something, that I was thinking about. If we believe in a free market system, why is, is he doing the same thing for, say, what is it, Train, or when one of the competitors to Carrier? Why is the federal government or president-elect getting involved? I mean, I think it's great that we're keeping jobs here, obviously, but I also think that it goes against the notion of a free market system.
Well, is there anything to do? I mean, don't they have defense contracts with this particular company as well, with Carrier?
I don't know. What I do agree with Eric, though, and that's why I think it's great that the jobs were saved. So short-term win, but now we found out it's kind of tarnished. But long-term, I think it sets a terrible precedent for exactly the reasons that Eric mentioned.
Sure. Why wouldn't every company threaten to send jobs overseas in order to get a subsidy or some
close nuclear power plants in order to get a subsidy?
Exactly.
Oh, I see what he did. It was a cross and then an uppercut a little. Yeah, it was pretty.
How are we bringing it back to Jagoff?
Free markets and stuff. And I'm like, oh my God, dude, how can you leave that opening for me?
Touche.
Now that was a good one.
No, that's Justin's show.
Yeah, with the other guy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. No, look, the fact is that what Trump did is he collaborated with his running mate to give $7 million in bribes to Carrier to keep some workers in the country while still sending hundreds of workers out of the country in order for Trump to have a great photo op and an illusory message.
Yeah, it was a great story for
company after company after company after company all over the country. That's just not how it works.
No, and it was a great story for a couple of days. Everyone went, wow, he saved more than 1,100 jobs. That's great. Well, it's now not 1,100. It's 730.
Right.
And, it's...
By the way, the parent company for Carrier is United Technologies that has $6.7 billion in federal contracts.
Yeah.
So instead of...
I wonder if any of them are with DOD or at the Pentagon.
With their $125 billion that they just hid in wasteful spending? It's all good stuff. This is all... I don't even understand what's...
We need to touch on that.
We will. Dave, do you want to hang out some more? Because we're going to kind of go back and forth. We have I don't want to keep you. I know that you're taking care of the kids tonight. Are you up for some more segments, or are you done?
Oh, are you kidding? They're sound asleep, man. I'm in the basement. I'm good.
All right. We are hanging out with Dave Lundy on the line. He just did Chicago Tonight to talk about what's going on down in Springfield. And we are talking about what's going on everywhere politically. We also have in studio with us our friends from Knife and Tie, Nikki Allen and Hannah B. It's short for your last name. Is that what...
Yes.
And tell us about Concord 55. I mentioned it briefly a little bit ago.
Yes. So Concord 55 is a new private event space in Lincoln Park. The address is 1355 West Concord Place. It's a really beautiful, raw, industrial style event space that you can do a lot of different things with. We've had weddings. We just had an awesome kids' birthday party with a moon bounce and face painting and different things like that. And Knife and Tine can cater your event there as well.
And I know that the first event I went to, well, I went to the opening and then I went to Nikki's bridal shower, which was a lot of...
Carissa brought a petting zoo to the event space.
Yes, there was a petting zoo.
There's a petting zoo in this event space.
There's a photo with us wearing boa constrictors and petting ferrets. And what other animals were there?
There were ducks, turtles, snakes, birds, skunks.
All kinds of things. Well, it's kind of like the show. The show is kind of a petting zoo. We've got to take a break here and more music from Rich Cantu in conversation with our friends from Knife and Tine and our political team with Ken Jakubowski, Dave Lundy, and Eric Elk. More in a moment. You are listening pretty late, and we are thrilled to welcome Rich Cantu in the Allstate Showcase studio. He's playing one of his originals, Nitu Niyo.
Mm-hmm. Amar es tratar de ponerte en el mismo ser en la que está tu amada. Ahogarme en el mar de tu cama con tres cobijas y una sola almohada. Para mí, mi, 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 mi. Y voy recordando los besos de la plata de tu labio de barco. No me interesa volar, soñar en Nueva York. Si no te tengo a mi lado, ni tú ni yo, ni el mar, no sabremos qué decir, qué es lo que quieres.
That's Rich Can too with Ni Tu Ni Yo. Do you have any events coming up you'd like us to make sure everyone knows about?
Nothing particular. Right now I'm in the studio with my band.
Yeah.
So
laying down some tracks, as they say.
Laying down tracks. Yeah, my band's called Antenna. So you can look us up at Antenna.
Antenna?
Antenna. AntennaTheBand.com.
AntennaTheBand.com. And you can find Rich Cantu on Facebook if you want to hire him for some, you know, holiday music or live music for any events you have coming up. So go to Facebook, find Rich Cantu, C-A-N-T-U. Thank you so much for coming in tonight.
Thank you for having me.
Of course. My pleasure. And we have on the line with us Dave Lundy, who now I have to hold you on to after the news. Are you going to be able to do that? I keep stretching it out, Dave.
Of course. I'm here for you, Patty.
Well, I appreciate that because my producer wanted to know what about the $50 billion deal with a Japanese billionaire, which I think Ken was kind of alluding to as well off the year earlier. There's so many. Is it going to I mean, this is before he even takes office. How are we even going to manage these conversations? I don't know how to organize any of these thoughts.
We had five significant things today. We had the carrier thing. We had this issue, which you just mentioned. Mm-hmm. We had his Trump in his tweet in a fit of pique at Boeing this morning. We had Michael Flynn's son being fired or passing over tweeting conspiracy stories on the internet.
Oh, my God.
And we have Bob Dole being as the person responsible for the Taiwan call.
I'm not convinced that that call is a bad thing, though. And we have the whole Pentagon $125 billion
waste, which is almost one-fourth of their budget, yeah. Which is waste,
well,
and they buried it.
Well, they wanted to go through all the numbers and see where they could cut costs and cut down on bureaucracy, and they went, oh, never mind, don't tell anyone that that's what we found.
And it appears that the Cubs have acquired closer Wade Davis.
Breaking news. I have breaking news.
Dave, since you're on the phone, we'll let you pick which one you want to talk about when we come back from the news. Which one of those do you want to tackle first?
Oh, God, I didn't hear about the Cubs thing.
Yeah, they acquired a closer.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I have breaking news. Should I break it now?
Yes, go ahead, break it.
Donald Trump recently, about an hour ago, took credit for the White Sox trade of Chris Sale to the Boston Red Sox.
I can't wait to see what shirt they make him wear. You are listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, in the Allstate Showcase studio. Joining me is Eric Elk. He's a political strategist, and we've been running into each other in Springfield. You know, kind of, I've been watching the goings on down there, but Eric's involved in, do we say that you're, your title, would you like to tell people what you do when you go down to Springfield, Eric? Because lobbyist sounds terrible. People hate the word lobbyist, don't they? Do you find that people kind of flinch a little bit?
Yeah, I don't know that I'd say lobbyist. I'd say I'm a strategic advocate.
Ooh, a strategic advocate. I like... Ken Jacobowski, a crisis communications expert. Dave Lundy, the, I can't, oh my God, you know what the problem, well, he does something with aileron communications. is that wrong as well? Aileron. I'm saying that part right
now. No. You nailed it, Patty. You got it.
Yes. And you can make up your own title. I've decided to just make you the guy in charge of stuff.
Well, he has made up his own title.
Oh, there you go.
Since he's Aileron Communications.
Exactly. That's perfect.
I'm Poobah.
Poobah.
I haven't earned Grand Poobah yet, but I'm just Poobah.
Simply
Poobah. I think you're well on your way to Grand.
And after watching you wait for hours to provide testimony at the hearings on the bailout for Exelon, I think you should just give yourself just Grand. I'm just Grand. That's what you should be all the time.
I should have said that when I testified, because I testified three different times. I had it was a marathon hearing that Eric talked about, and then I testified twice, once on Wednesday and once on Thursday. You know, you sit there in the hearings. And you explain to the committee members how the bill actually works. Nobody cares.
Well, Gail Snyder cares. She's on the line. She's a board president of Nuclear Energy Info Services, and she wanted to join the conversation as well. Hey, Gail, how are you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
Very well. I apologize for disconnecting you a few moments ago, so thank you for calling back, by the way. What did you want to tell us?
Well, you know, the one thing that is going completely unsaid down in Springfield as well as in the media is that Illinois has the most nuclear waste stored from reactors of any state in the nation. We have the most operating reactors of any state in the nation. By extending this possible closure of nuclear plants, we are going to get 300,000 more metric tons of high-level radioactive waste generated in our state. And the shame of it all is not all that energy is even going to be used in our state. Some of it is going to be shipped out and sold to other states. So not only are we going to be paying higher energy prices for this radioactive waste, we're also going to be shouldering the burden of, you know, possible accident as well as the perpetual storage of this radioactive waste because there is no permanent repository to move it to. And on a national level, this is a nuclear energy storage waste crisis that the nation has not really faced up to and that the government has not resolved. And nobody is talking about it. And I just want to say, Nuclear Energy Information Service is the only organization that has testified and brought up the radioactive waste problem in this state. We testified before the H.R. 1146 bill was passed out of the Environment Committee. We were the only organization to testify against it. We also testified in the House and the Senate at these same hearings that Mr. Lundy was at, and we were happy to hear him object to the Exelon bailout. But a number of environmental organizations supported this, and no one is talking about the radioactive waste. And we want to make sure that people understand what they're in for by bailing out these nuclear plants.
Well, hopefully now that Harry Reid is out of the Senate, we can move forward with Yucca Mountain. I agree. I think we should get some of the nuclear storage, you know, off the shores of Lake Mission out of Zion after that plant was closed and the decommissioning's, you know, being done. I think we should get that out of Illinois.
What does France do with its nuclear waste?
Well, I mean,
they've made a huge commitment to nuclear power.
Was that Gail?
They have the same problem. They don't really have a solution to it. So I just want to say something. There's this myth that Yucca Mountain is a site that is ready to receive waste. We just held a three-day symposium with people who are concerned about radioactive waste right here in Chicago. We just held 3 days. We had 80 people from around the country fly in, and we had major discussions focused mainly on nuclear waste and what's going to happen with it. And Yucca Mountain is just not going to happen. It has been defunded. It is basically a hole that has been dug into a mountain that allowed geologists to go in and take some tests. There is nothing there. They have removed anything that they had put in that would be the start of a project. They have stripped it bare. The whole project would have to be refunded, which it you know, maybe that would possibly happen under Trump. All the experts at the NRC that were involved in Yucca Mountain are no longer there anymore. So they would have to staff up that whole wing of NRC, costing even more millions and billions of dollars, who knows how much, just to get it going. And it's been proven that that is not the right site. And they need to stop looking at that as a potential site, because it was really just a site that was decided based on politics. The people in Nevada are geared up and ready to fight if Yucca Mountain is proposed as a potential site. And what needs to happen is the federal government needs to stop Yucca Mountain as a potential site, and they need to do a scientific study of possibly the best geologic permanent repository somewhere else. We don't know where that would be, but it has to be science-based and not based on politics.
You are listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez. In the Allstate Showcase studio, joining me is Eric Elk. He's a political strategist and has been, we've been running into each other in Springfield. You know, kind of, I've been watching the goings on down there. Eric's involved in, do we say that you're, your title? Would you like to tell people what you do when you go down to Springfield, Eric? Because lobbyist sounds terrible. People hate the word lobbyist, don't they? Do you find that people kind of flinch a little bit?
Yeah, I don't know that I'd say lobbyist. I'd say I'm a strategic advocate.
Ooh, a strategic advocate. I like Ken Jakubowski, a crisis communications expert. Dave Lundy, the I can't. Oh my God! You know what the problem? Well, he does something with aileron communications. is that wrong as well? Aileron. I'm saying that part right.
No. You nailed it, Patty. You got it.
Yes. And you can make up your own title. I've decided to just make you the guy in charge of stuff.
Well he How's has that? Made up his own title.
Oh, there you go.
Since he's he's Aileron Communications.
Exactly. That's perfect.
I'm Poobah.
Poobah.
I haven't earned Grand Poobah yet, but I'm just Poobah.
Simply Poobah.
I think you're well on your way to Grand.
And after watching you wait for hours to provide testimony at the hearings on the bailout for Exelon, I think you should just give yourself just Grand. I'm just Grand. That's what you should be all the time.
I should have said that when I testified, because I testified three different times. I had it was a marathon hearing that Eric talked about, and then I testified twice, once on Wednesday and once on Thursday. You know, you sit there in the hearings. And you explain to the committee members how the bill actually works. Nobody cares.
Well, Gail Snyder cares. She's on the line. She's a board president of Nuclear Energy Info Services, and she wanted to join the conversation as well. Hey, Gail, how are you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
Very well. I apologize for disconnecting you a few moments ago. So thank you for calling back, by the way. What did you want to tell us?
Well, you know, the one thing that is going completely unsaid down in Springfield as well as in the media is that Illinois has the most nuclear waste stored from reactors of any state in the nation. We have the most operating reactors of any state in the nation. By extending this possible closure of nuclear plants, we are going to get 300,000 more metric tons of high-level radioactive waste generated in our state. And the shame of it all is not all that energy is even going to be used in our state. Some of it is going to be shipped out and sold to other states. So not only are we going to be paying higher energy prices for this radioactive waste, we're also going to be shouldering the burden of, you know, possible accident as well as the perpetual storage of this radioactive waste, because there is no permanent repository to move it to. And on a national level, this is a nuclear energy storage waste crisis that the nation has not really faced up to and that the government has not resolved. And nobody is talking about it. And I just want to say, Nuclear Energy Information Service is the only organization that has testified and brought up the radioactive waste problem in this state. We testified before the H.R. 1146 bill was passed out of the Environment Committee. We were the only organization to testify against it. We also testified in the House and the Senate at these same hearings that Mr. Lundy was at, and we were happy to hear him object to the Exelon bailout. But a number of environmental organizations supported this, and no one is talking about the radioactive waste. And we want to make sure that people understand what they're in for by bailing out these nuclear plants.
Well, hopefully now that Harry Reid is out of the Senate, we can move forward with Yucca Mountain. I agree. I think we should get some of the nuclear storage, you know, off the shores of Lake Mission out of Zion after that plant was closed and the decommissioning's, you know, being done. I think we should get that out of Illinois.
What does France do with its nuclear waste? They've made a huge commitment to nuclear power.
Was that Gail?
They have the same problem. They don't really have a solution to it. So I just want to say something. There's this myth that Yucca Mountain is a site that is ready to receive waste. We just held a three-day symposium with people who are concerned about radioactive waste right here in Chicago. We just held 3 days. We had 80 people from around the country fly in, and we had major discussions focused mainly on nuclear waste and what's going to happen with it. And Yucca Mountain is just not going to happen. It has been defunded. It is basically a hole that has been dug into a mountain that allowed geologists to go in and take some tests. There is nothing there. They have removed anything that they had put in that would be the start of a project. They have stripped it bare. The whole project would have to be refunded, which it, you know, maybe that would possibly happen under Trump. All the experts at the NRC that were involved in Yucca Mountain are no longer there anymore. So they would have to staff up that whole wing of the NRC, costing even more millions and billions of dollars, who knows how much, just to get it going. And it's been proven that that is not the right site, and they need to stop looking at that as a potential site, because it was really just a site that was decided based on politics. The people in Nevada are geared up and ready to fight if Yucca Mountain is proposed as a potential site. And what needs to happen is the federal government needs to stop Yucca Mountain as a potential site, and they need to do a scientific study of possibly the best geologic permanent repository somewhere else. We don't know where that would be, but it has to be science-based and not based on politics. In the meantime, the federal government is moving forward, even though it should be in a planning stage, but they are moving forward with what's called centralized interim storage, where they will take the radioactive waste from all the nuclear reactors and pick a few sites around the country. Now, Texas is the target of this right now, where they would move it to in a temporary storage situation, temporary meaning maybe 100 years. They don't have a permanent repository there. It would be stored on site in canisters, which are not safe, transportation routes that are not safe.
Gail, there's so much here that I really think that we need to be able to have our own segment with this. Can you hold on the line and give your information to Bennett so we can set up a time for you to come in? Because if you're up now, my guess is you can come in studio. Would you be willing to come and join us for a conversation about nuclear radioactive waste?
Today?
No, in the near future. Oh. That would be impressive. That would be short notice. No, You're unpacking a lot.
I think you should have our director in, really.
Well, I think. Well, you're selling yourself short. I think that it would be great to have a conversation with you. But there's a lot to unpack here, and I want to make sure that we give enough attention, because we have a listener that wanted to know about clean jobs for Illinois, and that's a whole conversation in and of itself. So hold on the line, and Ben.
Oh, and can I just add one thing?
Okay.
Our legislators in this state could have done all the wonderful things that they've done for renewable energy with solar and wind, without giving a bailout to the nuclear industry.
I think Dave would probably. Dave?
Together.
Dave, would you agree with that?
You betcha.
You betcha. All right, Gail, I think I agree with you. I don't know enough about it, because if there were 6 hours of testimony, I assure you I only know the surface, and basically I know a little bit from each side. Gail, hold on the line, and Bennett will take your information in just a moment. Dave, there was a lot there. Was there a lot of conversation about the effects of nuclear waste, about having radioactive byproduct that we now have to deal with in this bailout?
I mean, honestly, in terms of the legislative process, not really. It's, Gail's organization and their head, David Kraft,
it really raised a lot of provocative issues in that hearing. And frankly, they're experts on those issues. I am not. I consider myself, pretty expert on the market issues and the structure issues and the rate issues. But when it comes to the nuclear waste, you know, it's just something I know is a problem. But I don't really have any real answers.
Well, and that's the thing is, yes, go ahead, Ken.
Dave or Eric, Patty, who pays for the storage of the nuclear waste?
Well, it has to be
in Illinois.
Is it the companies or is it this? That's why I wanted Gail to come in sometime because I think there's so much there.
I mean, I would think the companies would be solely responsible. It's their waste, right?
Well, the company does, but we pay the companies. I mean, there's a whole issue around the Nuclear Decommissioning Fund. Eric might have a perspective on this. Recently, it was discovered that Exelon is woefully underfunded on their nuclear decommissioning funds. So, frankly, had they had these plants, one of the issues that the Gale organization raised is that had these plants closed, we would have been found ourselves in real trouble because there's just nowhere near enough money. So that the Exelon would have actually had to write checks out of the corporate checkbook to compensate for the missing money. But this happened in Zion, where they came in way short, and they really need to true up those funds so that should these plants have to close, and by the way, this is not the end of the story, and I hate to keep getting back to this, but this is not the end of the story because since Illinois has so much excess power and because prices are so low and because we've now distorted the market, that may be great for those two plants if they're the ones to win the contracts, but you got four other nuclear plants and Exelon's already rattling the sabers about its Byron nuclear plant, which is the largest of the plants in Illinois, and there's three others. So
it wants bailouts on those, Dave.
I predict that you're going to be hearing about that coming in the months or at least a couple of years ahead. Just recently, Exelon, there was a story in Bloomberg about some plants that could be the next wave of plants that could be in trouble. One of them was Byron. I'm like, geez, guys, you haven't even gotten your bailout for those two, and now you're asking for a third.
And Dave, how much did Boeing make last year?
How much did Boeing make?
And not Boeing, Exelon.
I was going to say, you're making me Google Boeing now.
Thinking Boeing on my. How much did Exelon
next.
Make
Boeing's
last year?
Next.
Yes, I was like,
next.
Yeah, Ken, that's a question a little bit out of left field. last year.
That's Eric. Eric, now you have to know these things. Go ahead, Dave.
How much did Exelon make?
$2.2 billion was their profit last year. And in fact, in the last quarter, they made $841 million alone on the strength of a hotter summer and higher energy prices than expected.
Okay.
And this is my same question for the insurance companies, for health insurance, because now they've today they released a pretty much a point by point what they want to have happen if Trump is going to get rid of the Affordable Care Act. They have some demands, and that should be really pretty. That's going to be a lot of fun stuff. More when we come back with I need a title for our political team. Bennett, I'm going to put you on that, a title for this segment that we're now doing weekly, because I mean, there's so much to talk about. 312-981-7200. And more with our friends, Ken Jacobowski, Dave Lundy, and what's your name again? Eric Elk. I'm teasing. You have the Blackhawks. By the way, did you listen to the Blackhawks game? Did you watch?
I was listening.
Holy cow. My husband was trying to talk to me, right? We had just scored a goal, so I guess he figured it was like a down moment. And he's like, blah, 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 something, something. And I can hear, like, 19 seconds later, I missed the goal. Because my husband's like, blah, blah, blah. No, I mean, I love my husband, but you know what? Shut it. You're listening pretty late. Your host, Patty Vasquez, is distracted by CNN because Eric Elk just pointed out something on my screen. There was on the line with us is Dave Lundy. He was on Chicago last night, to talk about the Exelon bailout, amongst other things, I'm guessing, in the state of Illinois, and the governor deciding he would not approve the bailout for CPS. So I don't know what that's going to mean for a lot of programs that are important to parents in Chicago, which, by the way, does affect the state of Illinois. Just want to put that out there. Also joining us is Ken Jacobowski. And Dave, Eric was just pointing to a story that's appearing on CNN that a white supremacist spoke at Texas A&M University. So I'm not really, well, Eric, what were your thoughts on that? Because I have no idea what's happening there either. I'm on news overload at this point.
No, just seeing that come across the ticker there.
That's even a thing.
Yeah.
Right. That this is the world we're living in. Well, we were talking before about Michael Flynn Jr. saying that this pizza joint was involved in a pedophilia ring. I don't even know what that was. Does anyone know what just fell off my...
No. No.
Things are falling. The studio is haunted. Bennett, the studio is haunted. Yes.
Well, it's not just Michael Flynn Jr. His dad, our soon-to-be national... Trump's soon-to-be national security advisor, actually has trafficked in false conspiracy stories involving sex trafficking allegations against John Podesta and Hillary Clinton. So both of them have done it. There's no place for that anywhere. And it was, I don't know if I'd say refreshing. I don't think you could use that word, but it was interesting that, that Trump finally, held somebody accountable for something that they did, by firing, Flynn's son from the transition team.
Yeah, he held Flynn accountable by firing his son. You've got to be kidding me.
No, there's like, two Flynns. Dude. There's two Flynns, Dave. There's Michael Flynn and Michael Flynn Jr., and it was Michael Flynn Jr. that
right,
was fired.
Right, but he's saying, but why would...
That's
why?
My point.
But Michael Flynn hired his son to be a part of this team.
Of course, of course.
Right, come on. The one I was worried about was not Jr. It was the national security advisor who can't tell the difference between fake news and real news.
Correct. It's
my God.
Yeah,
neither can the president-elect himself.
No.
Or the vice president who went on George Stephanopoulos and said it was refreshing that Donald Trump tweeted inaccurate and basically misleading and untrue tweets. I don't know.
Well, he tells us what he thinks. So really all that matters is what you think, not with anything that is true.
Your head's going to explode every single day. Yes, Eric, you wanted to say something?
Well, I wanted to focus back on this $125 billion waste at
Pentagon. And the Pentagon. Okay, we'll do that one.
So I think it's outrageous. And I think that there's, you know, for years, a senator in Washington put together a list, and he's since retired, and another senator's picked it up. And what he called it was the waste book.
Ooh.
As a takeoff of Facebook and everything mm-hmm. else. But and so it was Tom Coburn of Oklahoma who did it, and now it's Jeff Flake from Arizona. And they list out, in order, every item that they found that's, you know, kind of wasteful. And it's on Flake's Senate page, flake.senate.gov. And, you know, some of the things on there that I thought were crazy were, you know, $1 million for monkeys on a treadmill, given to Texas Maryland National from the National Institutes of Health. You know, there's things.
Are
like,
we still testing monkeys to go into space? Why do we have monkeys on a treadmill?
Right. This is the best. Number four, hipster parties. National Institutes of Health given $5 million in California for
hipster parties.
Yes.
Themed as a hipster party.
But this is the
for
kind
hipsters
of,
or themed as hipster party? Because Esmeralda, I think we would not mind hanging out at that party just to see the dudes with beards.
Yes.
Dudes with
beards.
I'll
pay some money into that.
Yeah, with secondhand clothes.
I loved the monkeys on a treadmill. They were awesome in concert. I got to tell you.
And that's not going to be the name of this segment, by
Wait a
the
minute.
Way.
That's going to be the name of...
No, monkeys on a treadmill.
Bennett!
No, it's a heck of a name, but we're not going to... No, we can't do that.
I like that.
It is good, but something
Wait,
other than monkeys on a treadmill.
It's just the same thing over and over again.
How about dudes on a treadmill? No, it doesn't
crazy,
work.
Crazy Trump stories. It just goes over and over and over.
No, I think the disturbing information developments, I think, that happened today, I mean... We've all had issues with Trump tweeting away. Today he tweets at Boeing in a fit of pique to kind of try to crack him because he was upset that Boeing yesterday took a position against his anti-trade policies. So what does he do? He makes up some tweet about the overprice of the new Air Force Ones that are being developed by Boeing, which is in itself crazy. It's just not. It doesn't make me sleep better at night knowing that the president-elect is using Twitter to communicate in a way that has the potential to have tremendous impact on markets around the globe. It certainly affected Boeing stock. The stock went down 1% this morning.
Well, I mean, to say Boeing is building, I think is inaccurate, right? Because it's it was $170 million contract to design a replacement for the Air Force One. And you have to have two in case one breaks down.
To keep the country running in the case of a disaster.
Yeah, I don't care if it costs $40 billion, if it's the best of the best.
Let's not get crazy.
Well, it's designed to keep our government operational in the case, in time of crisis. I mean, Air Force One looks great on television, and it flies the president to and fro.
And,
Harrison Ford did a great job of making
sure the Russians did not follow through on the... I'm sorry.
Fantastic job.
So it's like a five-year plan. I think it $2.9 billion over 5 years for the two planes. But I mean, you know, this is a top of the line. I mean, so much of it is classified even, but I mean, you can refuel midair and, you know, withstand certain attacks. It's got, you know, radar jamming. It's got all kinds of mechanisms on it. And you think back to September 11th, 2001.
Right. When we didn't know what was happening and we needed to keep him flying. Right.
And that's, you know, it did what it was designed to do. And so, you know, especially with Boeing being, you know, hometown company here, I do take a little bit exception to his tweets.
Well, he doesn't have any power to yank a procurement. That's something that thankfully is not in the purview of the White House, of the chief executive. But it's just very unsettling.
Would you is unsettling enough of a word for what's happening, Dave?
No, not so much. look, I'd like to talk, and I know you got to go to news shortly, but I'd like to, after the break, maybe talk a little bit about the generalization of the administration. I mean, how many generals are we going to put? Ex-generals are we going to put in positions of power? Within our economy, Trump just named another general to run, was it Health and Human Services, I think he named. And, you know, now they're threatening to, the Republicans are threatening to not move forward on the, they're basically putting the vote that is required to waive the requirements for ex-generals to serve as defense secretary. They're putting that on the mandatory budget bill that if you don't pass it, the government's going to shut down. So basically our requirement is give me my mad dog Mattis or I'm going to shut down the government. And you're like, what?
Well, it's kind of like living in the state of Illinois and being held hostage over a turnaround agenda. More after this on 720 WGN. You are listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase Studio. Joining me is Eric Elk, a political strategist. And we have Ken Jakubowski, communications expert, crisis communications expert. Dave Lundy on the line. He is from Aileron Communications. I have a texter who says that they're sick of politics and please pick other topics. Here's the thing. Are we even talking about politics anymore? Because it's become so absurd. It's not pop culture.
We're actually not talking politics. It's fun to talk about issues, and it's to be expected that a new administration will have a different take on all sorts of different issues and will prioritize things that the current administration is not prioritizing, and there'll be healthy debates over that. That's fine. I'm looking forward to that. This is just behavior patterns that we've never seen before in the history of our country from our soon-to-be president, and it's already had some disruption in the world order, and I just don't think it's very good. Frankly, I really think we could do without disruption in world order.
Yeah, you're right. It's not politics. It's world order.
This is totally
different. It's the future. It's the future of our country.
This is what we're talking about. Is the stuff that terrifies me. It's the 3 a.m. call. You know, how is it going to be handled to a guy that's not even taking security briefings? You can't wish this stuff away. It is what it is, and to me, it's terrifying. It's not politics. I wish we were talking politics.
What do you think, Dave? Do you wish we were talking politics? How would you describe this?
You know, I think it's theater of the absurd. So in the spirit of, you know, you like to do a lot of things on our culture. I think that our culture is entering a period of the absurd. You know, look, is it politics? Sure, there's some politics in here. But as you said, it's current events. I mean, this stuff has enormous consequences for our entire world. Okay. It's not just about what's happening here in Illinois. It's not just about the Exelon bailout. It's about everything. And you know what? If we're at war, that should affect everybody. Although some of the wars that we've had lately, where sadly a very small percentage of the American people were affected, and people were able to not see the costs that we really have endured in some segments of society. But this stuff's going to affect everybody. And you know, I really worry about that Trump does not seem to be growing into the office during this transition period. You know, you keep waiting for him to go like, oh, this is kind of a big deal. I mean, you know, the thing about the carrier thing that's interesting is Trump was shocked that people believed him. He was shocked that his words actually had consequences. Well, when you're president of the United States, your words have consequences every hour of every day, 24/7, 365. I just don't know how we're going to reconcile those two things. And look, whether you voted for Trump or not, if you voted for Trump, you got to be wondering, hey, he promised he was going to do this, and this, build the wall, you know, Obamacare, et cetera, and he's already gone back on a vast array of his promises. So, you know, I just don't know what we're in for. And, I really don't.
And to one of our listeners who texted, don't spread fake news. Boeing stock actually went up yesterday. That's from the 219. Oh, I'm sorry, just the 219. By the way, after Donald Trump's tweet, which was Boeing is building a brand new 747, one for future presidents, but costs are out of control, cost more than $4 billion, cancel order. Immediately after that, the stock price did, in fact, drop 1.6%.
Yep.
And
it had a very steep, precipitous drop early on.
Yes. And while it recovered, the immediate impact on a stock price, because a president says he's going to cancel an order, that's not something you dismiss. So, no, I'm not actually spreading false news.
In fact, presidents have, and this isn't just President Obama, it's been historic. Presidents do not call out companies except in extreme situations because they're of the fear that it will cause harm way beyond what is intended. So they do all that in private. You don't see presidents being critical of a particular company unless it's, you know, it's fairly extreme situation.
Yep.
For exactly what happened this morning.
So there you go. That's anyway, Dave, what did you, before the news, what did you want to address? You were mentioning.
Oh, you know, just the proliferation of generals.
In
Trump's cabinet. The principle of civilian control of the military is as old as the Constitution. And, you know, one of the things that happened during W's tenure was that W would often say that, you know, I'm going to follow the advice of my generals. And what we learned in the Cuban Missile Crisis with Kennedy is, no. Your job as president is to take that advice as a data point along with all the other data points, and you draw a conclusion and you make a decision. You're not just supposed to do whatever the military tells you to do. And so the fact that Trump seems to be deifying the generals, and by the way, I'm a big supporter of ex-generals, for the right job. But there's a reason that in the entire history of the United States, you've only had one as head of the Defense Department. You're not supposed to have generals in charge of the Defense Department. You're supposed to have civilians in charge of the Defense Department for just this reason. So, you know, it's just one of a whole lot of things that we're seeing that that makes you scratch your head. And, you know, he just today announced another general in charge of Homeland Security, and we got a general in charge of defense, and you got a general in charge of, I forgot what else.
And a doctor in charge of HUD.
The doctor in charge of HUD, Mr.
I'm not ready.
Dr. Carson. He initially said that he did not want a position in the administration, especially a cabinet level position, because he's never managed an organization before. Mm-hmm. And then he ends up appointed head HUD, and people said, oh, well, he lived in public housing. No, he didn't. He now has said, oh, well, no, my mother did everything she could to keep us out of public housing. He has no expertise in it. It's like, how does that work?
By the way, to our listener,
I wonder why.
Yes, go ahead.
I wonder why Ben Carson was put in charge of a poverty program of housing. Oh, wait, I'm sure it has nothing to do with his race. I'm sorry, but it's insane. If he'd appointed Ben Carson Surgeon General, I'd be like, yeah, okay, I get that. I don't like it, but I get it.
Right, he's a neurosurgeon. It's in the title.
I was thinking that's where he was going to end up. It would make sense, but mm-hmm. nothing really
Even
makes sense.
HHS, there's some, okay, you got healthcare experience. I get it. You're a doctor. I don't agree with you, but sure, I get that. But HUD?
Okay.
Yeah, but they also administer a lot of programs for children and families in need. It's not just housing. But
it's urban development.
But Eric, remember, he specifically said, Carson
went
on record.
I'm not experienced enough.
He said, I'm not experienced enough to run a large organization. I've never done it before. Never run
and
anything
he ran
like
for
that.
He ran for president.
And he ran for president. Everyone made fun of him at that point. They're saying, yeah, but you ran for president. So now he ends up heading HUD.
Right. But here's the thing. We can talk about this, and we have been, but I think it's important that we can debate it and talk about it. But we need to be supportive and hopeful that they are all successful.
It is
so important that they be successful because it impacts us. It impacts all of us across the country.
And the president does.
How does it not, though?
Because people will say, what do you mean by they're successful? By the way, the 630 says, give the guy a chance. He is not giving us a chance to give him a chance. At every turn, he is revoking his chance at being given a chance. He's tweeting in the middle of the night. He's making bizarre appointments. He's calling Taiwan, whatever the reason is, whether it's Bob Dole being the lobbyist for Taiwan.
Dole with an E, not a D.
Dole. I didn't say Dole. Yeah. I said Bob Dole.
No, to the person from the 630 area code, I certainly don't want to be talking about this stuff. I like to just go on as normal and
Have restaurants come in and give us lovely food.
Talk about policies and changes.
What's important to Americans.
Yeah. But Trump seems to he just has a habit of mm-hmm. stepping on himself and in stuff every day multiple times that causes people to scratch their head and say, what are you doing?
Yeah.
I don't disagree. The thin skin, the whole notion that, tweeting after SNL. I mean, since SNL's been on the air, they have gone after every elected official.
They said Gerald Ford lost because of him, because of Chevy Chase's impersonations of him.
They were great. I remember them. They were phenomenal.
They've mocked everyone, across the board. And so you've got to be able to take that in stride. And I cannot believe
he can't take it, apparently. It's odd. I mean, he should send out a tweet. Touche. Very funny show. Really enjoyed it. Alec, I think you could do a little bit better. Maybe you can meet with me for lunch one day and I'll tell you some secrets. But instead, he takes it so seriously.
Dave, what would you say the threat is to America when the leader of our country is saying, stop making fun of me? There's a threat there, isn't there?
Well, I think the threat comes in the form of foreign leaders who are able to manipulate him, who are able to goad him into doing things he shouldn't do. You think about what would have the Cuban Missile Crisis have been like if Donald Trump was president. Mm-hmm. It scares the bejesus out of me. I remember when I was in college and the movie War Games came out. Everybody
want to play
War
a game?
Matthew Broderick.
Right.
Exactly. Would you like to play a game? And I remember during that era, that movie, all I could think about was, oh my God, the person on the other end of the phone with the general is Ronald Reagan. Oh my God, Lord help us! And now I just wish Ronald Reagan were the president because he was at least rational and didn't have this thin skin problem. He's just such a little petty man. I just fear the first confrontation we have between Kim Jong-un
and Donald Trump.
Well, you know, to be an effective leader, you should never let others, whether they be your employees or people on the outside, you should never let them see you sweat.
Right.
You don't show vulnerability. And unfortunately, President-elect Trump, time after time, shows his vulnerability and has shown his thin skin. And you know that North Korea, Russia, and now China are just waiting, or is it China, are waiting to tweak him. Although I don't really think that China is in a joking mood anymore. I think they're really ticked off based on the front page editorial that ran in the newspapers today in China.
Wow.
Oh, the Taiwan thing. Well, I'm curious, Eric, you said you think the Taiwan thing was a good thing. Why is that?
Well, I don't think it. I mean, so they had the years, what was it, like 72, 79, 82, where they kind of had the agreements between the U.S. and China. And I think that with China, you know, doing this whole funny business, devaluing their currency, putting the tariffs on some of our goods while we're supposed to be not having tariffs, and the way they've been treating us, I almost think it in some ways sends a message that, you know, these things can't go unnoticed, and there's consequences.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing.
Yeah.
We're all like, yeah, there's consequences.
And I agree. I part of me thinks that, you know, there's a part that thinks that, you know, hey, you shouldn't do that when we have these agreements. But the thing is, China hasn't been living up to their end of the deal at all. And they, you know.
At what step in the last 40 years have we stood up to China and said, hey, you know, your treatment of.
We haven't.
Right. We have not. And not, but this is also not the way to do it.
Right. Maybe this wasn't the way to do it. Maybe, you know, the time.
I don't think it moves the ball down the field. I don't think this addresses.
Well, Taiwan apparently engaged Bob Dole because they wanted a closer relationship with the next president. Mm-hmm. This predated the election. This started in the summer. They, you know, we don't, as of the 1979 agreement, we do not have formal diplomatic relations with them, but we do everything else. We sell them military parts. We support their democracy, and with good reason. I mean, if Taiwan, those are the guys that lost the civil war to the folks that are running mainland China. They all went over to Taiwan, the nationalist leaders. And if the danger has been that if we engage with them, if the Western world engages with Taiwan directly, that China is just going to invade Taiwan and squash it and eliminate it for good, which it has the power and capability to do, which would be a disaster. So the world has kind of stayed off, hands off, and China has kind of agreed to more or less look the other way for world order.
Right.
But this, talk about meddling in another country's affairs. That's what this is.
We need to take a break, and when we come back, no politics. We're going to tell me something good. Dave, do you have to tell us something good that's not politically related? My guess is...
I want you to tell us about your power snatch.
More after this on 720. My jerk and clean, too. You are listening pretty late because Dave Lundy has been on hold the entire 2 hours since we started our segment, Monkeys on a Treadmill. That's the unofficial title right now. It's our working title.
You know, you could do bearded monkeys on a treadmill.
Bearded we'll monkeys.
Ken to grow some facial hair.
Yeah, just, oh, there you go. Yeah,
that's true.
Dave, you go ahead and tell us something good.
Blackhawks won.
Yes.
Acquire a big closer. You know, all I got is sports, baby.
That's all good stuff. I love that.
And it was Jorge Soler in that trade, right, Dave?
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Because, you know, we all love George.
No.
I was surprised that.
That's not something good. You're missing the point of this segment. Yeah. Ken, tell me something good.
Oh, starting Sunday, I'm going to be joining Mr. Lundy, and my wife will be out of town, which means I'm responsible for my 7-year-old, soon to be 7-year-old, all week. So that'll be fun. I'm looking forward to it. We have a lot of fun when mom is gone.
Very cool. Quickly, Eric, your turn. Let me do that. Oh, get your plows on your. Go ahead.
Got plows on my dad's trucks. Ready for winter.
There you go. Ed's all set. Bennett, before we go?
I have a fresh pile of laundry sitting at my home.
No, clean laundry is a wonderful thing.
Yeah, it was that I did it before I got home, so you know I won't have to go home to a pile of dirty laundry.
Exactly.
Oh, great.
Now you've got to put it away. Esmeralda, how about yourself?
I ate that mac and cheese that was really good.
Oh, from Knife and Time.
Yeah.
The best mac
delicious.
And with bacon sausage. Bacon.
Lovely.
Sausage.
Oh, man, you guys had mac and cheese with bacon in the studio, and I wasn't there?
I know. I promise to have food next time you come in studio. The week of the 19th, we'll figure out a date.
So good.